Hey, America.
Start listening now. Oh, it's the off season. We are going all the way back to 1989 today. Come with us into a Eurovision that looked like an ad for a word processor come alive. Derek, roll the music.
And welcome to another Sierra Games episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country that has Celine Dion and is not giving her back. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won't. We're just not.
We love her.
We're going to hold on to her harder than, I mean, Canada was just like, yeah, who wants her?
But then she's like, Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah. Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, we got her. All right. She's not showing up next year. Like, I mean, maybe video, but even that, I'm really not.
She has some other things going on, you know, following her health trials and
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give her all the space and all the lead. She would be welcome with open arms and hearts. But if she wants to put her feet up and take care of herself with all the things that she's got going on, that's totally cool as well. But the door is open.
If we could just get her to give out the 12 points from Switzerland.
Oh, my God.
You know, that'd be cool.
So no,
that'd
be a gig.
That would be easy enough.
Really something.
I was just going to say, you know, the worst that they could do is just sort of be like, and also Celine Dion won for us last time. And they cut to her and she's just sipping Bartles and James on a cabana in Las Vegas, you know. She's just
fuzzy slippers.
Just chilling. Yeah.
Bunch of like really attractive men like fanning her with palm fronds by the pool at Caesar's Palace.
What are those Spanish backup dancers doing now?
Ooh. Oh, yeah, those two? They finally unlaced those corsets.
Marco Mengoni walks into the shot and then they cut back.
he's got a bathrobe on. He's glasses. Yeah.
Speaking of glasses, Sam, hit him with the social.
What? All right.
You wear glasses.
It's funny.
So do you. Yeah, I guess. Visual joke. Anyway, you can find us on all the standard social media outlets and some of the substandard ones, too, at 12pointsUSA, or just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can find some of our merchandise over on our Redbubble page, or you can support us via a monthly contribution on Patreon, or a one-off contribution on our Ko-fi account. That's Ko-fi. Whether you support us financially or not, we love you, we appreciate you, and see you either way. But our Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes. And sometimes it's a little pathway for them to send us burning questions that we will answer on the show. Yes. So we are going to pull one from the bucket that we didn't do last time. Here's one from our patron, Monica. Thank you for writing, Monica. What is the experience really like on the inside? I'm not sure if I really want to see all the behind the scenes stuff and camera people on stage. Would it have ruined it for me to see two men or two techies? I think one of them was female, sneaking out to tip Nemo's prop. Did the close-up cameras interfere with just enjoying the show? I'm gonna let Eric have the first crack at this because I have not been in the arena for a ticketed performance in quite a few years. I like watching from the press center.
You sounded like you said watching from the vent. Like
yes, I crawl into the vent.
You're watching through the grate with a little tiny popcorn.
Yeah, press room is just gets worse and worse.
Seriously.
You gotta crawl through. Oh, so yeah. I'm gonna answer the last part of this first, actually. Will the cameras interfere with just enjoying the show? Yes, probably. There are not a lot of spots in the arena, especially if you're on like the lower bowl, so 100 level or whatever it's called, where a camera will not at some point be in your way. The cranes are gigantic. They can go basically anywhere. So if that is a big concern, it's probably not going to be an issue for a lot of time generally, but sometimes things will be in the way. There were side light panels in Malmö that if you were close enough to the stage on the side would really, really get in the way. So sometimes you can glean some of that from like when they reveal what the stage looks like, you know, okay, what's the view going to be like? But if you're lower level seated, you will probably be obstructed at some point. If you're on the floor, probably fine. There are also the things. This is an issue I have with having standing room tickets for things is I'm rather tall and I get very self-conscious about blocking people. And so if you don't like getting blocked, I don't know, stay away from me.
You never cut it as a Eurovision cameraman.
Mm-hmm. No, never. I was the one covering up Windows 95 man's junk in that one shot.
Nice hat.
I assumed it was Gustav, actually. Yeah. I'd say the view was great, but it's not. Let's see. As far as the other stuff goes, in terms of like seeing the changeovers, I mean, it really is a different experience. For certain performances in particular, it's very different. Stuff that's really specifically meant for TV. Sweden from this year is a good example. Or Ali Alexander, You know, it, depending on where you're at in the arena, you just don't see anything on that. You just don't. And
sometimes it is kind of fun to see how the sausage is made, though. Like,
yes. Oh, yeah.
If you're the kind of person who likes, you know, if you see a clip of a rehearsal and suddenly there are backing dancers that pop up out of nowhere and a camera angle changes, like, oh, where'd they come from? Sometimes it's kind of cool to see them like make their way to the stage and kind of hide behind the cameras and do all that kind of trickery. I think I wouldn't say it ruins the magic to see how that happens. I think it just adds a different layer to the magic. Mm-hmm.
One thing I might recommend is go to like the Monday, Wednesday, Friday shows, the jury shows, because one, they're much cheaper, like way cheaper generally. And then you get to see everything live. You get to see how the sausage is made, as I said. You get to see cool. And sometimes they do extra stuff in those shows after they stop recording for like backups and things like that. And then you can go home and watch the live shows on TV the way God intended, so to speak, and you kind of get the best of both worlds that way. And the last couple of years, actually the last 3 years, Liz and I have gone to those Monday, Wednesday shows and kind of got to see everything and then got to watch on TV / from the press center and kind of compare notes and see, oh, that's what they were going for and that sort of thing. So I think there's a good way to do it. If I had to sum it up, what's the experience really like inside? It's a lot of fun. It's seeing this stuff with a crowd of excited people is really cool.
It's a good time. Highly recommend it. And another bonus, if you end up doing a Monday, Wednesday, Friday show, is if you happen to run into one of the folks on the outside doing the press polls or the audience poll, the exit poll, that might be one of us, as it has been the last couple of years.
Indeed.
Which is fun.
What's it like watching all of the stagehands scurry over everything while the postcard music is playing?
It's so impressive. It is
like
incredible.
Cockroaches swarming over a piece of bread as soon as the lights are off. You know?
Oh my God. It's this choreographed technical ballet. And then just
it honestly is.
It's like, incredible.
Yeah. Like in rehearsals and things like that, you'll have like cuts if like the stage isn't quite ready yet or someone isn't off, they have like a kill switch sort of that's like, don't do the foosh, don't start the song, cut to the host who will blab for 30 seconds and then we'll go. And really the stagehand's performances in some to some degree is measured by how few times that has to happen, especially for the live shows.
Yeah,
but that's why when you see a live show, it's the fourth time this has happened in sequence. And this year, our good friend Ewan pointed out, this year during the final, it happened zero times. They nailed every transition.
Wow.
Yeah. And for a stage like so the good. one they had this year, where it was sort of this long thrust stage, that's even more impressive. Like considering how long, like the extra distance that people had to lug stagecraft.
There was a lot of
luggage going on. Mm-hmm.
Real lug fest. it's really fun. And I definitely recommend, you know, experience it at least once if you've never done it. And if it's not for you, then you try. Yeah. At least we tried. Like that song by, oh gosh.
It was the Czech Republic, last year, 2 years ago?
Oh, more than that, I think. I'm going to look that up and see if
that was a good one.
It
was a really good, I think I voted for that one.
Was that the same year as We All Poop?
We All Poop.
Maybe. Yeah,
that was We All Poop. That was the We Are Domi year.
Yes, All the Blood.
Such a good
all
year.
All the Blood.
That was a fine year.
It was a fine year.
A good vintage.
Good mouthfeel.
I double checked. It's 2020 was that one. So that was the We All Poop year. It was also the first Benny Cristo year. That was not the We Are Domi year. That was a little while later.
What was the name of the artist?
It was Karel.
Just Karel. All right.
Yeah, with three L's.
That's obviously. Right.
Karelalala.
Karelalala.
All right. We've got a very small amount of news of little consequence regarding Eurovision 2025, the newest Eurovision on the market that all the kids are talking about. Oh, Latvia, no. No, 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 no. Don't do that. What's going on here?
Oh, who posted this?
That was me.
All right, Derek, what news has crossed your threshold there? What, tell us about it.
I saw this on Reddit. There was an online petition to divest from Eurovision and use all that money in sports instead. And the petition got over 10,000 signatures. So that effectively qualifies it. That was like the threshold.
Discussion in parliament or something? Or
To get some kind of political attention. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think anything's going to happen with it, but it sounded like they got the signatures really quickly. Like they posted it and almost immediately people were like,
yes,
we're done here.
But it's essentially a petition that says, do you hate Eurovision and like sports?
You basically.
Can you find 10,000 people to sign that petition in less than 2 hours?
It's the jocks versus the theater nerds. We know how this goes.
I just thought it was an interesting little note. I don't think anything's going to happen with it, but
probably
no. Especially
but we could be depriving
countries that wanted to bail. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I never really thought Latvia would be one of them, but maybe.
I mean, the year that they qualify, the year that they finally break that heartbreaking streak, is the year that they start talking. We'll see what happens. I feel like every country probably has discussions like this every year. We've had countries withdraw in the past, saying, "Oh, this money could be better used for our new services," or diverting the funds for a year or to X, Y, and Z.
So counterpoint, though,
looking at you.
Counterpoint. We could be depriving the next Kristaps Porzingis of an opportunity to do something.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, but this is going to be the year. 2025 is going to be the year where Marcus Riva finally writes an absolute bring the house down banger, and there won't be a delegation for him to glom onto. Come on, San Marino.
It'll be tough if he has to sing during it.
I understand your train of thought, Eric, but if you just follow this logically to every single Eurovision country, you're going to have to come for Luka Doncic eventually, and I can't let Slovenia be deprived.
Okay, well, and the thing is, if we do that and fund the next Kristaps Porzingis, we could be deprived. Depriving the next Dons, and nobody wants that. So, God, I understand decisions need to be made. Okay, what else we got? EBU has confirmed there is an independent third-party investigation going on into we'll see what happens. I think we may have actually had another burning question about this. I forget who this was from that basically asked, is anything going to come of this?
I mean, who knows? Of course, not a lot of information is made public at this point, so anything is purely speculation. But hopefully something will happen, because I feel like there'll be enough discussions with delegations that are upset at certain aspects of things that if nothing happens, then you may have withdrawals, which of course is the opposite of goals here.
Mm-hmm.
So stay tuned. At this point, people can't really say much of anything, just because it would mess with the integrity of the investigation. But stay tuned.
I'm a big fan of this. Every Eurovision podcast, basically at this point, turning into a weekly "We Don't Know" update. anyone who is covering this is just basically has to every single time they record a new episode say, "Hey, guess what, people? We don't know."
It's like we need like a little stinger. Like, do any of you guys watch QI?
Mm-hmm.
A while ago there was a segment where the answer was like, we don't know the answer of it. There was just this sound that would come out. Just nobody knows.
Nobody knows. I remember that.
We need that.
I will go on the record and say I think that the result of this investigation will be something greater than nothing. But it
that's true.
It screams to me as like a slight change here and there, the sort of thing that won't really make anyone happy. Like an attempt to meet in the middle, and it just satisfies nobody, or something like that. But we'll see. We'll see. It would be really nice to see some specific things get addressed. For several years now, have been hearing about the mental toll on artists and things like that. So that's not even a political issue. So like, who knows?
Yeah, but take care of people.
We'll see what we'll see what happens there. In terms of other things that we don't know,
nobody knows.
We've had people talk about hosting. I keep seeing the word the phrase task force getting used when talking about finding a host city. That's exciting and a little concerning. But a few cities have in Switzerland have thrown their Swiss hats in the Swiss ring to potentially host. We've got bids from Geneva, Zurich, Basel, St. Gallen. I don't know where that is. Besides,
too far from Zurich. Supposedly, they have a large conference center area that with a venue that could potentially hold about 10,000.
Okay.
So it's not massive, but it's potentially doable. I think it's Zurich neck of the woods.
For a second there, I was worried that we were going to be filming a Eurovision at basically like a Hyatt Regency ballroom.
Hey, those are nice.
Yeah, we had a gala. My organization had a gala at one in Denver. It was lovely.
Conference room at the La Quinta Inn next to the airport.
Mm-hmm. La Quinta. Yeah, afterwards you can just go to the Taco Bell.
There you go.
Or Green Mill. I don't know. I'm a big fan of a tiny town that really nobody knows about. We got to make another Harrogate happen. You know,
as long as there's enough hotel space for the people who want to go and have to go.
Mm-hmm. Even Malmö is kind of an unknown city to those outside of Scandinavia.
Malmö is a great city for hosting Eurovision.
Mm-hmm.
The Malmö Copenhagen metropolitan area.
That's quite good for that. I saw one thing that seems a little more interesting, or at least more discussion worthy. Discussion podcast that supposedly Bern and Biel, the hometown of Jessica Biel, and also of Nemo. This is Nemo's hometown.
Yes.
Are looking into a joint bid. And Sam, this is going to be a question for you, our Eurovision encyclopedia lady. Is there any precedent to something like this? And obviously, like, this bid hasn't even been made yet, but how do you think this would work?
Like a joint bid? I mean, I guess... Yeah. I mean, I suppose the nearest thing that you could probably have it compared to would be the Irish held event that the event was in Mill Street, where the venue was basically it was a horse arena that they were able to turn into a venue. But I feel like most of the people that were performing or working, a lot of people were staying in, I want to say Cork. Let me just do a quick look here.
Oh, that one would be like a sort of a lodging in Eurovision Village area.
Yeah, and then they would bus people more devoted to
the show itself.
Right, exactly.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So it seems like Mill Street, which is a really rather small town. I mean, Wikipedia has its current population at 1,722. So the Jeez. Absolute metropolis that is Mill Street. But delegations were primarily based in surrounding settlements, including Killarney and other towns in Cork and Kerry counties, Cork and County Kerry. Killarney and Cork City held receptions for the delegations. So basically Mill Street was the place where the event was, but everything else, all the side events where the people were staying, any parties, any receptions, they were held in Killarney and surrounding areas. But Mill Street, I feel like I drove through Mill Street at one point. There's really nothing there.
Gotcha. Not even any Mill Street blues.
Oh, Danny, I hate you.
Why? You suck.
All right.
This isn't exactly the same. I will note the next scheduled Winter Olympics is dually hosted, Milan and Cortina d'Ampezzo. But looking at the actual map, this is multiple events, multiple disciplines and things like that. So it makes more sense for them to potentially be in different places. The venues for this are basically all across northern Italy. Very little of it is in either of the host cities, as it turns out. Milan is going to have the opening and closing ceremonies because they have a stadium. Cortina is in the mountains. That's where alpine skiing is going to be, like a couple of other things. But like other stuff is just all over.
That's kind of standard for a lot of the Winter Olympics, especially. I feel like when it was in Salt Lake City, like there were a lot of the events that weren't mountain based in Salt Lake City proper, and then a lot of stuff up in Park City. Mm-hmm. I feel like when it was in Vancouver, it was split up between Vancouver and Whistler. Whistler?
Whistler sounds right. Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, I feel like especially for the Winter Olympics, there is a lot of kind of divvying up, and maybe for the Summer Olympics, like the beach based stuff, oftentimes would be a little bit further away, but.
I love being beach-based. Are we going to get that this year? Like Paris has got the Summer Olympics, but then like sailing is going to be in Tahiti?
Yes.
Yeah.
That, Yes. I can't wait. I think they're maybe debuting surfing, and that's also going to be in Tahiti, something like that. So whatever Pacific colony is still run by the Swiss, that's where Eurovision will be.
I'll also note, noted
colonizer Switzerland. I'll also note that and then I'm going to move on. The Wikipedia page for the 2026 Winter Olympics has a whole subsection called Concerns About Sliding Sports. I'll let you look into that on your own.
Like bobsled, luge, skeleton.
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't actually read it. I just think it's a great headline.
Yeah, those sliding sports. You know?
We need to talk about sliding sports coming to cinema near you. All right. Let's talk about the actual business here. We have decided to cover, in honor of, I assume, Taylor Swift, the 1989 Eurovision Song Contest. No, it's actually, this is the last time Switzerland hosted, and give us an idea of what to expect. That's not how this works. But you know what? Let's talk about it. And boy, oh boy, what a contest it is. Let's see. It was in Lausanne, mm-hmm. which is a city in Switzerland that is not going to host this next time, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't have any venues that are large enough. The venue mm-hmm. for the 1989 contest was the Palais de Beaulieu, which is a theater space. It has just under 2,000 seats, so obviously nowhere near what we do today. It was very much that sort of sit down and, you know, tuxedos and very formal affair. It's almost unrecognizable from the contest today.
I gotta say, it's so weird for them to just cut to the audience after each song is done. And it's just a bunch of 60-year-olds who might as well be wearing monocles and holding champagne flutes. Like, it's really weird. Everyone is in a tux.
How quaint. Mm. Eurovision.
That's my Swiss accent.
Yeah.
Quite.
Also kind of fun to see the contest being presented purely outside of English. Like, just French announcers, and then the guy is the guy, as opposed to the lady who's really good. The guy is just doing both French and, I assume, German rather fluently, like, not too clunky. But funny how you can just follow along as someone who watches Eurovision. You're just like, I get the gist of what they're saying.
Yeah, so the two presenters, Jacques Deschenaux and Lolita Morena. Jacques is from Fribourg, which I think is on the French-speaking side of things, but near the German-speaking side as well. But then again, Swiss-German is very, very different from German-German.
From German-German.
It's a different, very different dialect. And Lolita Morena was a former Miss Switzerland, 1982, and was actually born in Italy and then moved across the border when she was a toddler. But it was nice to see them kind of switching between languages pretty seamlessly. Depending on the act they were about to announce and present, they did switch between French, German, Italian, a little bit of English. There was a little bit of Romanche, we heard a couple of phrases. Huh. This was the first and only time that Switzerland actually sent a song in Romanche, which was very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, they should do that next year.
They should.
That'd be sick.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah.
I have a quick note about Lolita something, the host.
Morena.
Here. I thought, is that her real name? So I looked. Yes, it is. And then I thought, well, that's possibly unfortunate. How long, when was she born in relation to the publishing of the novel Lolita? Because it seems like the sensibility of this depends a lot on that. As it turns out, when she was born, the novel Lolita had been out for 5 years.
Oh, dear.
So that's a choice.
Was it an instant hit? Had it been translated into Italian? Like,
it was a hit at the time.
Oh, dear.
I don't like talking about the book Lolita as a hit. A real,
I mean, like
real popular beach read.
So that's a thing that I checked out. So this was held at a Glamour Shots in Lausanne.
It was filmed at the Lava Links at the Crossroads Mall.
Oh, rip Lava Links. Oh my God. I miss that place so much.
Absolutely in love with this. The set is really 1989 trapped in amber. If you showed this to anyone and asked them to give the year that this was performed in, I'm saying 90% of all guesses are within 2 years. Like, beautiful, just rods of neon, you know, platonic solids.
Yeah, there's a one of the like basic light cycles from Tron on the stage for some reason.
Yeah.
it's just so 80s.
Enormous fan. So by this point, they've got the postcards up, and the postcards are. We're really spoiled these days because every single Eurovision has lovely postcards that are, they always look slick. Either they're very quaint or they're like big and expansive. But this one, it's like, we still feel like it's primitive. It almost feels like it's being filmed on your uncle's camcorder sometimes. Like they've got the peel and wipe transitions between them. And every single time it's accompanied by this, like... This MIDI music that it sounds like it's from a 1991 VHS tape of things to do in scenic Cedar Rapids. Like
there was one venue like
that was just the coolest thing to do in 1989. I understand, but like that's really really frozen in time as the food court at a mall.
Yeah, they went to a venue that I noted called Crans, Montana.
Yes, yeah, that was like the first one.
Yeah, yeah, that's the first one. And it's not a huge departure from the agonizingly long video introduction to this.
Oh
contest.
My god. I was gonna bring this up.
Yeah. It's like 6 minutes.
The entire thing was over 20 minutes before we actually heard song number one.
Oh, sure, yep. Yes. Yep.
It is and I looked into this as well. It is the second longest time that a Eurovision has taken to get to song one.
Oh.
Do you know which one was the longest?
Would it be Italy? Would it be Milan? This last, like,
or yeah, Rome, 1991. I was gonna say.
Yeah, it is 2015.
2015 in Sweden. In Vienna.
Oh, that's right. That was
that
a
one
really
was about
long
21
one.
And a half minutes before song one started.
Ooh.
This was also in terms of timing. A few notes on this. It was the second Eurovision ever to go over 3 hours. The first was in 1983. It is now so it was the second longest Eurovision ever in terms of running time. Today it is the 22nd longest.
I was gonna say, and let me tell you, actually, for those who probably wanted to shave some minutes here and there off of this contest, I'm glad that they didn't shave anything off of that interval act. Let me tell you, Eurovision has never had anything like that, and they'll never have it again. But I wish they would. Oh my god, they said it's a song contest, so of course, what should we do for our song contest interval?
Stupid.
And they said, I know. They said William Tell, and we'll do it 10 times in a row.
With terrible camera shots.
Oh, just bad.
Let's just focus and zoom in on these balloons for a couple of minutes.
And then you're and just like looking at the balloons. You're like, what are we going to do with the balloons? What's the, like, you're just on tenterhooks being like, okay, what are we going to do to these balloons? Oh, and then he fires a crossbow bolt through the strings of the balloons. Ah, I see. And then you're just, all right, let's cut to something else. And he sets up 5 crossbows in a stack. Great.
Derek, you had something?
I felt so bad for his assistant.
So fun fact. That's his sister.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Her smile looked like a hostage video when she was holding the newspaper and he had
the newspaper, and she just turned to the side and she's like,
turn the newspaper around and it says, please help. Yeah. So, yeah,
that's the newspaper that proves she's still alive because it was printed on the day of the contest.
That is his sister. They are from a family of circus performers
going back
several generations. They are apparently very close with the Wallendas, the flying Wallendas. They, you know, these folks run in the same circles. 3 ring circles, perhaps.
Nah.
and so this was the family business, basically, for a long time. I regret to also report, Guy Tell. This is the performer.
Yes.
Here. He passed away in 2017 in a car accident in Sarasota, Florida.
Oh, geez.
Was visiting some fellow circusy types, and Sarasota is sort of a circus hub of sorts, it seems like. He was there. Something weird happened. He was in a multi-car crash. He was the only fatality in the crash. But he is unfortunately no longer with us. We will not have a reprise of this act in 2025.
Well, how's his sister doing?
I assume she's fine.
Okay.
She didn't die during the interval act, which is what I thought was going to happen. So, so we're good. I was actually mildly relieved that for the big thing at the end, he put the apple on his own damn head.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
but I'm not sure if you noticed, he missed. Technically, he missed.
Yeah,
it didn't touch the apple. It just didn't pierce the apple.
Yes, and then they showed slow motion footage of, like, I'm guessing it would have been rehearsal footage where it did pierce the apple, and then it's like him holding the apple triumphantly, pierced through the.
Well, then he pulls the arrow out of the wall, stabs into the apple, and then holds it up like, "See, I hit it." Wow, sleight of hand.
Frauds. All of them. This is
It's just a bluff.
We should get Penn and Teller as an interval act for something. Oh, I feel like that.
They'll go off on libertarianism. Yeah. I don't want to hear that.
No, that's right.
Well, at least one of them will. The other one won't say anything.
Fair enough.
Everyone will just mime libertarian views.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Let's anyway. That guy that was weird. I really thought I was going to watch someone lose their life.
And somehow snuff film.
Yeah, somehow I've done this show for 5 years and I didn't know about the interval act where someone died.
It's just really elaborate because it's, you know, it starts out fine with just like, I'm going to shoot this string. I'm going to shoot this, you know, I'm going to shoot the thin side of a newspaper. It's kind of impressive. And then at the end, you know, it's an apparatus of 12 crossbows shooting back and forth, popping balloons. At a certain point, I don't know. I was like,
it was just the setup. The setup of it. The fact that I understand.
Healing them on and off. Jeez, rapid fire.
Yeah. I mean, I understand that for something like that, you need to be really precise and you want to be the one to make sure that it's everything is up to scratch. But my God, it just, how long did it take for them just to set things up and calibrate and make sure, like,
And also because it's 1989, what is passing for like a glamorous magician's assistant outfit actually nowadays looks like she's a waitress at a supper club. So it's duply unflattering.
Well, yeah, but it's a Swiss.
Hadn't hit yet, so.
It's a Swiss supper club too.
So it's like a chalet. Yeah. And she has to wear like quasi lederhosen and someone has like the big Swiss horn in the back. Oh, it's bad.
And the salad is a single leaf of romaine lettuce and it costs $60. Check out the Patreon, by the way. We're trying to get to Switzerland in one piece with as many kidneys as we can.
Staying in the basement of the UN building there. Wherever it is in Switzerland. I think the time has come to talk about the music.
There was an actual context.
I think it's easy to forget because I think we all came away with the same sort of blush at this contest, which is that
Jesus Christ.
This is not a banner year for the contest. Not to say that it wasn't run poorly. The two hosts actually did a really nice job of keeping things moving. I liked them. That was good. There was no one of the nice things about these old contests is that there's no awkward banter with people in the crowd or awkward banter with folks who are just like, I just performed, get out of my hair. So that's nice. But these acts, we are still in the basically no dancing phase of the contest. A lot of just songs that are specially written for Eurovision without sounding like any goddamn thing a human being would listen to. It's so strange.
It's rare when the reprise from the winning singer completely outshines all of the acts in. And I'm saying this unironically with no shape. Celine's "Where Does My Heart Beat Now" happens to be my favorite Celine Dion song of all time.
Yeah.
And I mean, the woman can do no wrong in my eyes. No. Yeah. She could have pulled a B track instead and let somebody else have the spotlight. Because I'm just thinking, oh, it's Celine.
Highlighted the entire concert. I had no idea that was a Eurovision song. Though to be fair, I kind of half expected her to come out and go, "Near, far, wherever you are."
A Eurovision song by virtue of, you know, her performing it there.
I mean, it was
obvious. That's your favorite song, Celine. You can do no wrong.
I mean, that's her first English language single. And it was performed there probably a year before it was a hit in the US, at least.
Yeah, it was only released as a single. It was like the third or fourth single off of her English language debut. And I think that song was released in like October of 1990.
So that's
Eurovision performance was the world premiere of that track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of cool to see pop up. It's like, oh, I know this song. This is great. It's number one in my ranking, by the way. So Celine came out and gave the trophy to our winner, which was Yugoslavia, along with that kid from the agonizingly long intro. Does anybody know who that kid is? Because no. I couldn't find anything on this.
No.
I mean,
no. I was waiting for you to reveal that he was some horrible person.
No, yeah. he was Ari Aster. No. It's just like being brought around like he's President Child in the intro, and like it was really weird. And it seems like whoever's watching this on like local television at the time has to know who this kid is. Like, he has to be famous for some stupid reason or something. But I, as an American 35 years later, am so confused. Who is this child, and why is he in my Eurovision?
Actually, if we're talking about the same kid, it's actually a girl.
Oh God.
I'm seeing on Wikipedia, I mean, short hair and either Cindy or Sylvie Eschbach, and is sort of like the embodiment of Heidi.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I guess that tracks.
I mean, he was Swiss character. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Sweden's got Pippi Longstockings. Switzerland's got Heidi. I don't know anything else about Sylvie. Or Cindy.
All right. Well,
yep.
That's good enough for me, I guess.
Yeah.
So yeah. My other big reaction to this year, just in general, besides, oh God, was
yes.
I swear half the song sounded exactly the same.
Yeah. This is a very, very homogenous kind of year. Yeah.
Yes,
everyone was going for the same thing.
Was the hair.
Oh, well, that's 1989 for you.
The Aquanet budget on this, you know?
Oh, woo! Good Lord. The hair in this show, put the whole thing on mute. Watch the hair. We had a bald guy that somehow still had a ponytail.
Twice. We had two of those.
I mean, oh my God, this show, it is an incredible time capsule. We'll say that.
Fantastic. I'll give it that. All of the women look like they work at Sport Clips at the mall. All of the men look like they teach high school band. It's amazing.
Yeah. Don't have a huge amount of other Statmotron stuff for this, and we'll get into before we get into our top fives. I'll just note this. Rock Me, the winner from Yugoslavia, is the last time that a song has won from the last spot. It used to be fairly common. It was the sixth time it had happened, but it has not happened since that a song going last has won the whole thing. They won with 137 points. That is the same number of points that Celine got, but slightly larger margin of victory, and with a slightly larger number of countries. This had 22. Celine's year had 21 because Cyprus dipped out for a year. Otherwise, the lineup was pretty consistent in the late 80s.
How close of a win was this? I remember this one that the UK was very close.
Yeah, right? Seven points.
7 points.
Yeah, oof. And because they were last in the running order, Yugoslavia revealed its points last. And there's a bit of tension there because they had a 13-point lead going into that. So they had clinched, but it was interesting to see how close they would make it because if they gave 12 points to the UK, it's a 1-point win of their own doing. They gave them 6, I believe. So the tension was gone a little bit early. 137 is a relatively low score for a winner from that time. Only about 54% of the highest possible score. That is the fifth lowest of the 12 points maximum per country era. The only ones lower are Believe, Satellite, My Number One, and Running Scared, which is really, really low.
Well, yes.
And that's post 1975, pre 2016. So 12 max per country. It has become increasingly difficult to get even this sort of number now that there's 24 points apiece. But it was not an especially dominant winner or anything like that. But it won.
It won
for Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
Which brings me to a question that's kind of been kind of rolling around my head a little bit, especially as we talked so much about Croatia this year at the contest. So Yugoslavia, of course, at the time was a still united nation, but the structure of Yugoslavia at Eurovision was still very much divided domestically. So in order for a country to pick, or in order for Yugoslavia to pick their song, they had their own national final, Jugovizija, where...
Jugovision, love it.
Yeah, Jugovizija, yep. So 8 regional broadcasters from 8 different sections of the country sent songs. Every TV studio had at least like one fast pass to the competition. And then most of them sent a whole bunch of other songs to be selected by a jury. So we had, TV stations representing Sarajevo, Zagreb, Skopje.
I saw Skopje. Was came in second too, right? Oh, no. I'm thinking of the Serbian one.
Titograd, which is now Podgorica, Belgrade, Novi Sad, Pristina, and Ljubljana. And so Zagreb, the TV Zagreb pick, or one of them, Rock Me, was the one attended. So it was a Croatian song selected by a Croatian broadcaster that won at Jugovizija. And because of that, Croatia hosted the following year. So the question is, do we count this song as Yugoslavia's only win? Do we give it an asterisk and say this was Croatia's first win? What do you think?
I can see the argument either way. I would just kind of say that it's Yugoslavia. We got it credited as Yugoslavia, you know?
I mean, they competed as Yugoslavia. That's kind of where I'm at with it, at least. Yeah.
I mean, Zagreb was certainly Croatia. That was really, from what I could tell, the hub of the Yugoslav music scene at the time. Most of the songs that were selected by Jugovizija all the years they did it, I think like about half of them came from Zagreb. But no, I kind of just wanted to bring that little argument and talking point up here. Because, you know, if Rim Tim Tagi Din had won, would we have been hearing echoes of Rock Me in Zagreb?
I do think so. I think that's implied as a part of their heritage.
Yeah. But I mean, if suppose it wasn't going to happen this year, but like if Serbia, well, Serbia did win. Did they talk about Rock Me when they hosted?
No.
That makes sense because.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They were part of a country that won, but not exactly anymore, I guess. So. Derek, what do you think?
Folks at home, let us know. But Derek, what do you think?
It's hard to say because like they had their own like little mini national selection that was actually what we now consider multiple countries. So it like won a special tier to get to Eurovision and then win again. I would say it's Yugoslavia, but I would say, you know, Croatia can take credit for being that artistic voice that got it on their behalf. It's a weird thing to say, but if, you know, like countries, if like somebody's like born and raised in a country, then they move to another country and win a gold medal for them, I'd say the original country can still take some credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, all like the Soviet Union's, to bring it back to Olympics, Soviet Union's Olympic medals are credited to the Soviet Union.
That's
a fair analog. Yeah,
like all the basketball players are from Lithuania, come and dance with me. Anyway, thank you.
I got you.
By the way, did you hear Intervision's coming back?
Didn't they talk about that a couple years ago? I feel like
I've seen some more concrete stuff about it this year. I don't think we're going to cover that one, but it sounds like it might be coming back. All right.
I'm still waiting for Turk Vision. And we know Panarctic Vision is coming back.
Oh, good. That's exactly what I was about to ask. We got Panarctic.
Turk Vision just appears out of nowhere and then disappears into the mist.
It's in October, and it'll be based out of Nuuk in Greenland.
Yes. I need our Arctic weirdos to come back. Yes.
I
had another couple of really quick questions and like things that I kind of wanted to bring up.
Yeah,
there was a trend this year. Not only did we have our mysterious Heidi analog in the opening ceremony there and passing along the trophy, we had 2 acts this year bringing kids.
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh,
little kids.
Yeah. Little ones.
Little
kids. Yeah, so this is a time before Eurovision had any sort of lower age limit. And Sandra Kim had won Eurovision in her early teens. I want to say she was 13 when she
won? I think she was 13.
Yeah, the lyrics said 15, but she was 13. Mm-hmm. This year, the young boy from Israel was 12, Gili.
Singing with his school teacher or something? Like that one was
They weren't teacher. It wasn't teacher student, but
it was weird.
It was weird.
I'm just going to say it was weird.
And then Natalie Pach from France was 11, making her the youngest Eurovision act that will ever be, unless you're counting like backing singers, in which case we'll talk about Betty Mississiego at another point. But that's another question for another episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kids.
The Frenchie gal. You know, you could have fooled me. And again, this was a hair thing because the hair is all done up sort of wild. And I think, oh, she seems fairly young, like she's 18 or 19 or something. Then you zoom out and you get the adult backing singers and you're like, oh, God.
You thought that she was 18?
Maybe. I don't know. Like
she looks like she's on the cover. She looks like she's on the cover of the Babysitter's Club. Like she that's a little tiny girl.
I
have to agree with you. The hair
when it's zoomed in and all you see is her face and the big hair is what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I would have guessed 14, 15 initially, but
yeah, I would have said 16 or something. Like, yeah, it's 14 to 16. And she could have just been very small as well. Like
yeah.
As we know, Valentina still hasn't aged.
It's true.
Because she's a vampire.
Right. Yeah. Granted. We all know that. Yeah. So this was the last year in which this was allowed. Apparently there was some public controversy about this going into the contest. It was like, hey, it's kind of gross to have kids do this. And then they did it anyway. And then I guess the EBU was like, we agree. And then the 16-year-old minimum was in place in 1990.
It feels like kids going on Star Search is what it feels like when they go on there.
Didn't they kind of have their own category, though? Like... I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. Yeah.
But just youths.
Youths. That was weird. Yeah. I'm glad they don't do that anymore.
Yeah. And this is a full like 13, 14 years before Junior Eurovision appeared on the scene. So, yep. Ooh. So did we want to roll into our top fives or any other talking points that struck you as we thought about the show?
The hair.
Just talk about this hair forever. As I go down my top five, I'm going to be talking about hair a lot.
I have one thing to say, but we can go ahead and cut this if you guys don't agree. But I'm just going to, one of my first thoughts was, hey, remember when they let ugly people on TV?
Was it just the styling or like,
I had the thought, definitely. I was like, everyone on here looks like the videos that play when you're in a Euro shop and they're like playing like music videos from like 1987. Like everyone's gorgeous and not Hollywood ready. Like I swear, even the UK's singer looks like he is. I'm like, is that the doctor from Star Trek Voyager? Like straight, like these people are not glamorous. You did? Like he looks just like Robert Picardo. It's great.
That's overly mean. I just was like kind of shocked. Like, and I understand that's the joke, you know, that people say, hey, music was better when ugly people used to make it.
And it was.
But it's just kind of funny to me, like going through all these things, like none of these people would ever be allowed on Eurovision nowadays. Like there's an attractiveness threshold that just exists on television.
This is Serhat Erasure.
I feel like if we had given a lot of these acts styling and you know makeup from today, I think that a lot of people that you would consider meh would be a lot more reasonable to what you consider to be attractive. I think
from Italy was glamorous.
She still is. Actually, she was at Sanremo last year.
Oh
yeah. She's done it more often than just about anybody. She's absolute badass. And
it's the complete opposite of that guy's voice.
Was an interesting pairing to open the show with, too.
We're saying, like, he's a 5, but he's a 1990, or he's a 1989 8.
That's
the point we're making.
Like, okay. I loved Italy's song. It was like pairing Joe Cocker with Linda Ronstadt. It was beautiful.
Such a good example.
That's exactly right, I think.
But like make Linda Ronstadt a little angrier.
Yeah.
I know, Aksha. We love Aksha. Anyway.
Top fives.
All right, who wants to go first? Bam.
Oh, dear.
I choose you.
No, you shouldn't because I'm still moving things around, honestly.
Gotta stop.
No, I can't. Somebody else go.
All right, we'll cut that. It's me. All right. I'll go because I got a lot of stuff to say and my stuff is going to be funnier.
Ouch.
Number five, I don't think I gave this the time of day at all when we did our Luxembourg rundown, when we were celebrating Luxembourg's re-entry to the contest. My number five is Monsieur from Luxembourg, if only because of the sick-ass trumpet solo that starts this song, played by our second bald guy with a ponytail. So I'm glad that we've covered both of them. Number four is where I put Rock Me. You know, it won for a reason, but it's not to my particular tastes, I think. Number three is where I put France, Je Vole La Vie, by our little tiny girl who could pass as a 17-year-old, Natalie Pack. Just one Easter, apparently, Natalie Pack. I love that she sings this song during the chorus, and then in the like post-chorus going into the next verse, there's a little break where a guy is playing sax, and I swear to God, it just looks like we're cutting to like her dad after he gets home from work playing the saxophone. It's absolutely wonderful. Love it. Number two, I will have no aspersions cast on Italy because I actually really, really like this song. I put Afe Voluto there. I think his gravelly-ass voice and her powerful, beautiful voice, they mesh so well. The song gives me the vibe of like the love theme that plays over the credits for like a really good movie that came out in 1989. That's what this feels like. I feel like this is a great way to start the contest. And my number one is the UK. It's why do I always get it wrong? A really solid entry, a narrow loss, a very deserving second place.
All right. So evidently, the UK, even though they always get it wrong, they got it right for you.
They did. Okay. They did.
I don't know.
That wasn't that funny.
Derek, you go next.
I do deserve this.
Because I'm still stalling for time.
I know, right? I'm looking at my list again just to make sure. Okay, yeah. Let's go with this. My honorable mention, I'll just say, was Luxembourg. I actually really liked her voice. I thought she had a good singing voice, but the song itself just kind of got weird toward the end. My number five, and you'll never ever hear me say this again, is Sweden.
That's so strange, Derek, because this song was dog shit, and I can't believe that you lap it up.
Lap, lap, lap. I think the thing that really got me was just his singing power. I thought like his voice, mm-hmm. especially because he goes for that really big note at the end and he actually hits it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was kind of, and it really stood out to me because so many of the songs felt very subdued. Like they weren't really pushing themselves. And here comes a song that where the singer is like actually pushing himself and really going for it. I don't know what the song is about. I didn't look it up, but just kind of listening to it, I'm like, oh, wow, he's really performing. And I think my list is just kind of like a collection of, oh, okay, this stood out for me for one reason or another. And in this case, it was because he like showed up versus I think some of the other songs. I was just kind of like, okay, all right, next song, please. My number four is where I put the UK, deserving second place. I thought it was quite good. My number three was Spain. I don't know why. Again, hair. I think it was the hair that got me.
Really quick. You said Spain. Did you happen to mean Finland? Because I feel like they out-Spained Spain.
I mean, the flamenco, yeah, was really impressive. I thought her performance was quite strong. I quite like this one. My number two was Turkey, which was missing on the YouTube video for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was some sort of, I mean, the video that we were all pulling off of, I think there was some sort of copyright claim.
Yeah, it was cut in such a way that made me think that was like, your options are, you can remove this entire bit or you get a copyright strike
remove
or something.
It all.
Yeah.
I mean, the video is still up. You can find it.
Yeah, it's still
up. Oh, yeah, there are other videos with it. Yeah,
I might have also given Turkey a shine here on number five, but it's my own honorable mention.
I like the ethnic sound. What can I say?
Mm. Always, yeah.
Which means my number one is actually Finland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's really the guitar riffs in that one I think are really, really cool, and it really stood out. I was like, oh, this is like you said, all these songs sound exactly the same, and then when a song comes up that sounds different, and suddenly it really stood out. I was like, oh wow, here we go. And you know, a pretty chill song overall, but you know, they're trying something different, they're moving into other genres and other styles, and I'm like, okay, cool, good on you, Finland. Yeah. Keep it weird. So there you go.
All right, is it me?
Yeah, you're the problem.
Okay. Yeah, I'm, yep. All right. So my favorite from 1989 is Welcome to New York. I think it's a great opener for the album. Before Danny kills me, I will move on to the actual thing.
Thank you.
I'm going to give an honor mention to Portugal, which I think was quite nice and was kind of in that boat of samey songs, but I think stood out a bit. This is going to be very controversial, I think, what I'm giving one singular point to.
Oh, no.
It's Ireland. Listen.
Why? Why? Listen.
Because it's the real he. That's why.
All right.
You know what? Before Danny shoots me, I'm just going to say that, like, I felt musically it felt a lot more interesting than the other things that were going on. It felt like a Duran Duran or New Order sort of a vibe. It, like, the type you'd get on Wish. I acknowledge that. I'm not saying it's great, but I enjoyed it. I just thought musically it was a vibe that I could relate to a lot more than just the really generic stuff that was like half of this contest. It stuck with me. I liked Ireland. I'm sorry. My fourth place is Finland, flamenco. Mm-hmm. Just really, really cool. I love that they out-Spained Spain. And we talked, I think, in just the last episode about how Finland maybe has the wildest history in the contest in terms of just like doing different stuff. A good example of that. One year they were Spain instead. Like, that's crazy. That's fantastic. And I love them for it. My third place is Yugoslavia. I feel like they picked a good winner. It's fun. It tried a little harder with the choreo than some of the others, which had the, like, smallest amount of non-zero choreography you can have sometimes. My second place is Denmark, a song that I don't think has come up at all, but did quite well in the final standings. I think they were third. Yeah, this is Birthekir with the Malerbjørnrod. Big fan of Birth Canal. I thought this was just incredibly playful and fun. I love that they did a gag with the conductor, which just in a show that really has a hard time keeping your attention at times. I really love that. I thought it was a fun bit and to kind of mess with the orchestra side of things and break that wall that seems to be there a lot of the time. And my number one is Turkey. This it stood out like it was the most unique song. I thought it was sort of the back and forth between the dudes and the dudettes was an interesting way of doing the song and the performance, and it was really fun. And it's Turkey, please come back. Because
for sure,
like, this was a quintessential Turkish performance in a lot of ways, and I think it was the most fun of anything in the show. If you watch this one and you watch the most popular viewing of this, you'll note that you'll see like the Turkish postcard and then it'll cut straight to the introduction of the song afterwards. Make sure you make a point to watch the Turkish song. It's great. And especially in the context of the rest of this show in particular, it is a breath of fresh air and it's great. So that's my number one. Sam,
I'm solidified.
Good.
All right. I had, you know, some whole bunch of swaps and I had some honorable mentions as well. Finland I have as an honorable mention. Luxembourg, Italy as well. Sweden I thought was solid, but I'm gonna give my 1 point to Denmark.
Yay.
Again, just it was just pure fun. You know, we were talking about how a lot of these songs didn't really incorporate choreography, and this one really did, and had this sort of fun cabaret cheeky feel that was still, it was cheeky without making fun of the contest. It was really, it was just fun.
The word cheeky was in my notes on this. I think that's the perfect descriptor.
Yeah,
for sure. In a year where we needed a bit of cheek, as it were.
Yes.
One thing that really impressed me about this one too is they really used the lighting, I think, in a way that a lot of the other ones didn't. It got really colorful and bright and there was a lot of movement, and it suddenly, like, everything just kind of became a little bit more up, like high energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was sort of an overhead projection or display, sort of that triangular thing. I forget which song it was, but there's just this thing where they did a real simple series of like sweeps. They were like sweeping motifs that sort of like seemed like they were just like dashing towards the viewer. And I'm like, this is extremely simple, but it's also probably very cheap and very affordable and effective for how like very simple it is. Just like put whatever you want on the overhead and it looks good. For as basic a contest as this is, kind of low tech, feels kind of insulting to call it low tech, but everything works really well for all the stuff that they have.
Number two, or 2 points, I should say. This is where I put Turkey. I also really, really like this one. The fact that it really brought more local flair than basically any other song in the contest did this year. I really do appreciate it. I can understand how some people might find it irritating or grating if they don't get it. but I do really enjoy this one. I also wanted to give a shout out to the taller of the two women, Arzu Etse. She actually returned to Eurovision, I want to say in 1995, with a song called Sev, which really, really showed out her vocals. It was more of a traditional ballad, but just very, very cool to see that sort of two different sides of her vocal ability.
You know what the Turkish song reminds me of thinking about it? Is Lada Niva.
A little bit angstier and...
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of like vibes and attitude on stage and things like that. Like and obviously we all love that. So
yeah,
I'm just saying. Yep. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no worries. So my third place, this is where I put Yugoslavia, especially after, I'm not sure if it was just the placement of the song and a very ballad and mid-tempo heavy year, but this just felt like a really fun breath of fresh air at the end of the show. And at that time, Yugoslavia was sort of on a kick of these sort of dancey rock and roll kind of songs. They had a run of a few songs before, and I think you can almost say the song after that kind of had that very fun, uplifting kind of retro party vibe. And I thought that this one just kind of hit the right place at the right time. So yeah, that's my 3 points there. My second place, and this, I kept going back and forth between my top two. And I basically had to go for the song that I like better, but is somewhat problematic, or the song that I like slightly a tiny bit less, but is just pure. And I love Conquistador. I love Portugal with all my heart in terms of its catchiness, but at its heart, it is a song about colonialism. And I cannot, I'm sorry, I cannot give it all five for that reason. You know, if you look at the lyrics of the song, it's basically the Portuguese Empire bragging about all the places that they conquered.
And I'm, you know, like, who's a great guy? It's Vasco da Gama.
Yeah, Henry the Navigator. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, it's catchy, it's fun, it makes me happy, and then I kind of scratch behind the surface. I'm like, oh, this hasn't aged well. So yeah, so it is my number two. And so that leaves my number one, very pure-hearted. I'm normally not a fan of a ballad, but Nina from Spain is just so lovely, and it just makes me so happy to listen to. It's just this, it's a ballad, but it's emotional, but it's not, she smiles through the whole thing in such a way that it's like, I'm just up here having the time of my life, singing about how much I love this person and how I am born to love. And it doesn't feel like it's taking itself too seriously. And you guys know me well enough to know I'm not a fan of a ballad. I'm not a fan of a pretty girl in a pretty pink dress singing about love. That's not my vibe. But this just enchants me every damn time. So my 5 points, my top and my number one for this year goes to Spain, which means that we have a tie for our silver medal. Allora, Mr. Neff.
There is no silver medal in Eurovision.
That's right, Cario.
Cool. All right, so looking at our leaderboard here, Sweden and Luxembourg each got a vote apiece.
Hey, France, and Ireland.
Oh, where did I? I'm sorry, that was on the next page. My apologies. I just prefer to ignore Ireland.
Oh. We all do.
Except sorry. For yes. Yes. So Ireland, Sweden, and Luxembourg each give get one chance. Point a pop.
Give it a chance, guys.
Hopping up a little bit, France gets 3 points. Italy and Portugal each with 4. Denmark with 5 points. Finland and the United Kingdom each get 7. Spain and Yugoslavia with 8 points apiece. But number one, the unofficial winner of Eurovision 1989, the real winner in Lausanne, was Turkey.
Yeah.
Woo. Which came, what, second from the bottom?
Yeah. Oh, it did horribly.
Man, yeah.
It did. Yeah. It got like 5 points.
Yep. Just a reminder that this was an all jury voting show. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That explains a lot.
It's no accounting for taste. I would like to note, I know a couple of you rated the UK very highly, and I just want to say I really did not care for the UK in this year, but I do think it was one of John Malkovich's most daring roles.
And I will also say, looking at the leaderboard of the actual contest, this is one of those situations where losing at the contest doesn't mean that your career is over. Arguably, the act with the longest career after the show was Arnaud Pointer from Iceland, Daniel August Haraldsson is his full name, but he is the lead singer and sort of the head behind a couple of bands in Iceland, most notably one called Gus Gus, which is a really, not just a little, the mouse from Cinderella, but they've been an active electro pop band and, you know, an electronic band from Iceland, basically since the early 90s, and actually very well known outside of Iceland. So arguably the one who's had the longest ongoing career since the show is the one who came in dead last with Nolpois.
Well.
Oh, that and Anoxa, but she's just a goddess.
Italians are just different.
They are.
I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know what to say to our listeners, because we usually encourage them to watch the contest, but like, tell you what, pull this up on YouTube, do watch some of the contest, look at the hair, look at the set. It really is a thing to behold, but just preferably not for the full 3 hours.
Have it on in the background while you're working on something else. You know, just take a look. I don't know that there's any Eurovision that's just absolutely not worth watching. This is a bit of a rough year, but if you want to feel nostalgic for the late 80s, I mean, watch 1988. And then when you're done with that, you can watch this one as well.
Yeah. But yeah, it just, this is the nation where we are going next year. God, and let's see that. how they step it up over the past, 30 some odd years.
Just think about how much more neon they have acquired since.
How many more crossbows can they fire at once?
Ooh.
Just think of the advances in Aquanet technology.
You walk into the arena and just poof. Can't wait.
Frosted tips.
Ooh, wow.
It's interesting. One of the questions somebody wrote down the show notes is like, how has the contest changed? And there's definitely an air of sophistication that seems to be in this era. Like you mentioned, you go to the audience and people are wearing fancy dresses and tuxedos. There's a smattering of applause. Like, people aren't like cheering and waving flags and going crazy. Everything just kind of feels very subdued. The stage is very small. There's not a lot of movement. And now it's like, it's an event, and it just is always moving, always very high energy, very up tempo, like just trying to keep you going, keep you excited. And it's kind of wild to go back to a time when it's like, you know, we're just going to chill. Like, here's a helicopter shot of some mountains, and then a woman with big hair singing about love. I don't know.
They talked a lot this year about like Eurovision is for everyone. This didn't feel like a Eurovision for everyone.
Oh, no.
It felt like a Eurovision for, I don't know, whoever Eurovision was for in those days. I don't know exactly when the change happened.
Who was it for?
Was it Katrina and the Waves where it changed? Was it Donna International where
it changed? Was it really opening changed? It up to public voting? You know, was it going into larger arenas instead of theater spaces and studios? You know,
that's a whole second episode, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here it is. No.
So, Sam, let me ask you, and maybe you don't know, maybe this is something we can explore later, but was this a period of time when it was sort of viewed the way we kind of like view opera or something, as it's like a higher class of entertainment?
I'm not sure if the crazy camp had really kind of settled in, but you did have moments like the Skirty Ripioffi from Bucks Fizz that was earlier in the decade. You had a little bit of the self-referential jokey moments, earlier on in this decade. Songs for like Schmetterling were popular or popping up back in the 70s. This feels like in the 70s, there was a lightness, and then it kind of went a little bit heavier and more serious. And then it kind of, starting maybe around 1991, started getting a little lighter again. I don't know when the transition from going to the Eurovision with your ticketed event in your ball gown and your tuxedo switched to inflatable hammers and all the craziness. Like, it's a really good question to ask, and I feel like I need to watch more old Eurovisions to kind of get a feel for that.
Yeah, we should do an investigative report on this, I think. But not this week.
All right, you at home, you listening to us, well, one, we appreciate you doing so, especially during the off season, but let us know what you think. Did you sit through 1989? Let us know what you think. What were some of your highlights and lowlights in the year? What other like old school Eurovisions do you think we should check out that we haven't already covered on this episode? I feel like we've done a couple in the past, but what would you like us to see, and what are your takeaways from this year? And what do you hope that Switzerland adopts from the 1989 contest looking forward to 2025? And what should stay in the past? Let us know what you think. Again, you can reach us on all the standard social medias at 12pointsUSA, or just email us directly, 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. If you're a patron, you can also message us right through there. And either way, we will see you on our next episode. Mm-hmm. Any other messages you want to send to the listeners out there, guys?
Oh, no. Just check out the hair.
So much hair. So much hair. Anyway,
hold your breath.
Until the next time, everybody, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I've been Danny.
And America.
Stop listening now.